Exercise 30. Talk 1. Listen to part of a lecture in an anthropology class. The professor is preparing the students for a field trip.
Today the lecture is about petroglyphs. But before we begin, let's go over our plans for the field trip. As you'll remember, next week we'll be meeting in the parking lot of the lot outside this building at 8 o'clock in the morning. The bus will be leaving by 8:15, so we can be at the petroglyph site by 10 o'clock. A heads up. Please wear comfortable shoes because we'll be doing quite a lot of walking. And the area at the site, it's laid out with paths, so we won't actually be doing any climbing. In fact, climbing on the rocks is against the law since the area's a protected site. But it's a rather long walk from the bus parking area over there to the site, and then we'll be walking the paths to view the petroglyphs, so you'll be glad you've got comfortable shoes on. That said, let's begin our discussion of petroglyphs. What are they? Well, the general definition's very broad, including any symbols that have been carved or hammered into rocks. The term petroglyph comes from two Greek words, petro, which means rock, and glyph, which means carving. But why were they carved in the first place? For a variety of reasons, really. Some petroglyphs simply appear to mark a trail or identify the presence of water or good hunting grounds. But many petroglyphs record important events in the history of the people, or they invoke some magical presence in religious ceremonies. The major culture in the area that we'll be exploring on our field trip is the Hohokam, who probably lived at the site from about AD 300 to AD 1450. Since there are no current inhabitants, it's difficult to interpret the symbols on the rock art, but their modern descendants have the descendants of the Hohokam have provided some insights. In addition, some of the symbolism is shared by many cultures, and therefore we can interpret a few of the symbols that we see there either by researching other similar symbols or by relying on interpretations by current cultural groups with similar inscriptions. Okay. There are four basic types of symbols common to the area we're going to explore, which I've drawn on the handout, the one I passed out at the beginning of class. So let's refer to the first drawing, which looks like this. As you can see, it's a figure of a person. You'll see these on many of the rocks. Some of them illustrate activities that may have been significant to the Hohokam. Drawings of this kind are called anthropomorphs. The second set of symbols, and these are called zoomorphs, are animal figures. Some of the more common zoomorphs are deer, sheep, snakes, lizards, coyotes, and birds, all of which are still found in the area. But besides the obvious allusion to a successful hunt or when they are drawn close to other drawings, like a reference to a historic event, then these zoomorphs might also represent clans or family groups that are named for animals. Look at this deer. Here's what I mean. It could be a reference to a family that had taken the deer as the symbol for their clan. So a third set of symbols, and again I am referring to the handout, these are various representations of circles, especially concentric circles. In most cultures, symbols like this represent the sun, which usually figures prominently in religious ceremonies. Here are several examples. Finally, I want you to watch for spirals like these. The spiral is thought to be related to water, which can symbolize life or migration, but more often is interpreted as a spiritual symbol, perhaps a representation of the emergence of the first people from of the spiritual world to this place. Let me also mention that when we go, you may see some crosses carved into some of the rocks, which are frankly very difficult to interpret. Some scholars believe that the cross may represent the important stars, such as Venus or the Morning Star. But other scholars remind us that many missionaries passed through the desert and may have carved the symbol of the cross on the rocks 1,000 years or more after the original carvings were made. Which reminds me, just a word about the site that we're going to visit. This entire area has highly significant spiritual meaning to the Native Americans. So I expect our group to treat it as a sacred place. You can bring a camera if you wish, since there's no objection to our taking photographs, but we should be respectful. Any questions?
Number one, what is the main purpose of this lecture? Two, what are petroglyphs? Three, how are anthropologists able to interpret the symbols? Four, what might be represented by a zoomorph? Five. Listen again to part of the talk, then answer the question.
But, why were they carved in the first place? For a variety of reasons, really. Some petroglyphs simply appear to mark a trail or identify the presence of water or good hunting grounds. But many petroglyphs record important events in the history of the people, or they invoke some magical presence in religious ceremonies.
Why did the professor say this?
But why were they carved in the first place?
Six. Select the petroglyph that is a spiritual symbol of life. Talk two. Listen to part of a lecture in an astronomy class. The professor will discuss comets.
Comets are small bodies from the outer solar system that are characterized by gaseous emissions and consist of a solid nucleus, a cloudy atmosphere, which is called the coma, and a tail. Let me say that again. Comets are small bodies from the outer solar system that are characterized by gaseous emissions and consist of a solid nucleus, a cloudy atmosphere, which is called the coma, and a tail. This is an example of a typical comet. You can't really see it in this diagram, but the nucleus is made of ice with rocks and dust particles encrusted in it. When it's far from the sun, the nucleus of a comet may be completely frozen, and most are quite small. But as a comet approaches the sun, some of the ice on the surface vaporizes, and the gas and dust particles that were embedded in the ice of the nucleus are released and blown back by the solar wind. And that's what forms a hydrogen atmosphere and the tail of the comet. It's important to note that the tails of comets always point away from the sun because the solar wind pushes them back. Most comets have a nucleus that is less than, say, a body 10 miles in diameter, but the comas can extend out nearly 1 million miles. And some exceptional tails have been known to trail 100 million miles behind their comets. We classify comets as either short-period comets or long-period comets, depending on how long they take to orbit the Sun. And you may want to write this down. Short-period comets require fewer than 200 years, whereas long-period comets need more than 200 years. The key number there is 200 years. So when you do the math, you see that short-period comets tend to recur often enough to be, well, anticipated by the scientific community. For example, Edmund Halley used Newton's law of gravitation to calculate a comet's 76-year orbit and predicted that it would return in 1758. When it appeared on schedule, the comet was named Halley's Comet, and as many of you know, it passed near Earth on schedule in 1986, and when we add 76 years, we should see it again in 2061. Well, maybe you will, even if I don't. A little more on short-period comets. They're nearer the Sun, so consequently, they're heated and lose their ice by a process called sublimation. So their supply of gas may be depleted after only a few hundred revolutions, leaving them without devoid of the coma and tail and all but invisible. But let me back up a minute. What I'm really saying is that the gaseous envelope burns up, leaving only a nucleus, which is virtually impossible to see. As far as we can tell, the short-period comets have their origin in a belt of comets that lies just beyond the orbit of Pluto. And since they are constantly burning up, in maybe less than a million years, all of the short-period comets, that's the short-period comets we're talking about now, they would have disappeared if it hadn't been for something called capture, a process whereby the planets, especially Jupiter, attract comets that have originated further away, replacing those that are decaying and maintaining the population of the short-period group at a more or less stable level. By the way, capture doesn't usually occur on the first pass, but may happen after many passes, and eventually, the comets that have been captured, they detach themselves and start moving toward the Sun, like other short-period comets. Okay, let's just touch on the long-period comets now. We think that the long-period comets come from a cloud of comets 1,000 times further away than Pluto. 1,000 times! Consequently, they may be seen only once in recorded history. It's also worth thinking about that most of these comets travel in elongated orbits that cross the circular orbits of the planets. Thus, the possibility of collision does exist at the points where the orbits intersect. Here, look at this drawing, which shows the orbits of four planets with several comets intersecting them. See what I mean? Where they cross? Oh yes, another interesting point. Some of the craters on the satellites of the outer planets are probably evidence of past cometary collisions. In fact, the Galileo spacecraft on its way to Jupiter got some fantastic photographs of impacts on Jupiter's right side. And even the craters on Earth's moon could have been caused by comets.
Number one, what is the main purpose of this lecture? Two, what causes the tail of a comet to point away from the Sun? Three, what is the difference between a short-period comet and a long-period comet? Four, what is capture? Five, listen again to part of a talk, then answer the question.
Comets are small bodies from the outer solar system that are characterized by gaseous emissions and consist of a solid nucleus, a cloudy atmosphere, which is called the coma, and a tail. Let me say that again. Comets are small bodies from the outer solar system that are characterized by gaseous emissions and consist of a solid nucleus, a cloudy atmosphere, which is called the coma, and a tail.
Why does the man say this?
Let me say that again.
Six. Identify the orbit of a comet.
This is the end of the listening exercises. Remember, you are making progress. Keep up the good work.